This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is a special hour of Radio Boston, and we are talking about the killing of Osama bin Laden. This hour, we're hearing reaction from Boston and around New England. We also want to hear from you. Do you think this represents a major victory in the war on terror, or do you think it obscures other lessons the United States has learned in the past 10 years? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK.
We're going to hear next from William Gavin, a former FBI agent who lives in Winthrop, Mass., and who's had a personal stake in the outcome of this story for a long time. Gavin was the former assistant director of the FBI Bureau in New York during the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. He traveled to Pakistan to bring Ramzi Youssef back to the U.S., where he was tried and convicted for that 1993 attack. And Bill Gavin, good to have you.
Thank you for inviting me, Anthony.
So your reaction, right off the bat, your reaction to the killing of Osama bin Laden?
Well, I think it's high time. It did a lot of different things. Number one, I think it brought some closure to the victims, although nothing can replace the loss of a loved one. I also believe that it showed that if we hang in there long enough, use the right tools, cooperate well, play well in the sandbox, we can reach our objective, and that is finding Osama bin Laden.
Now, I interviewed you back in 2001, just a few days after the 9/11 attack, and I don't know if you recall this. You had a drawing of an American eagle clad in stars and stripes, and he was sharpening his talons. You showed me this picture as if to say, we're mad, we're going to get the guys who did this. I don't know if you remember showing me that picture, but I'm wondering if you thought back then that it would take 10 years to get Osama bin Laden.
I do remember the picture, Anthony, but of course I didn't think it would take 10 years to reach that objective. I certainly believe that we have learned a whole heck of a lot going forward from 9/11. Bottom line is, I think we had very close to Osama Tora Bora. However, I know that we treated things differently in terms of our relationships with Pakistan at that time. We totally played into their hand, and there's no doubt in my mind that I don't accuse anybody in particular in Pakistan government, but somebody had a hand in getting bin Laden out of Tora Bora before they would let us move in.
And Tora Bora, of course, were those caves in Afghanistan in which he hid. U.S. forces had him surrounded at one point, but then he was permitted to slip away pretty much.
Pretty much so. We were asked to hold on until the government thought about it and made their plans. And in the meantime, my own personal opinion is the government thought about how they could let him get out of those caves and make his way out. I think it's probably pretty true that while we might have involved the Pakistani government for a bit during the course of the recent episode of yesterday, we sure did do one heck of a lot on our own and kept it very close to the vest, and it was successful.
Now, Bill Gavin, you mentioned lessons. What are the lessons we've learned in this long pursuit of Osama bin Laden?
Well, there's a number of things. I believe we learned since 9/11, we all learned how to do things better, how to cooperate better. The intelligence apparatus, the military apparatus, the law enforcement apparatus has now learned good ways to share information through task force. It had to be force feeding for a while, but now I believe it's very congenial, and things do happen where everybody shares information. I know that's the way I did it during the 1993 bombing. Everybody knew everything that was going on, and I think we've made tremendous strides that way.
So you're talking about sharing information across agencies, the FBI, with local police, with military folks, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely so. In 1993, when the bombing went down, that afternoon I opened up a command center, and everybody who had a stake, and it had to be probably 16 investigative agencies, and I think it was like 5 prosecutive agencies, all had a place in the room, and there was nothing that someone knew that everybody didn't know. That's the only way I'd play the game.
Interesting. Well, a lot safer. William Gavin, I want to thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
It is my pleasure.
That's William Gavin. He's the former assistant director of the FBI Bureau in New York. He lives in Winthrop, Mass., and he's now the president of William Gavin Consultants.
We are talking about the killing of Osama bin Laden and reaction from Boston and New England. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's take a call here. Judy's calling from Gloucester. Welcome to Radio Boston, Judy.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to applaud Dr. Bacevich. I think that, first of all, I'm very happy to hear that Osama bin Laden has been killed. I can't help but feel that way. However, I think that this is the time now that this has happened for us to understand that we are just as responsible as a country for the deaths of our citizens as Osama bin Laden or Al Qaeda.
Judy, I mean specifically, how do you mean that?
Our intentions in the Middle East are, we feel, this country and its citizens, I think most feel that we're somehow above the law, and that we can go into countries for our needs, oil, what have you. I think we still haven't understood why this has happened. And I think that this is the time now to take a good look at why did an Osama bin Laden arise like this? It's just time for us to take our heads out of the sand and begin to understand our responsibilities in this world as the great nation that we are. But to use, you know, we're not a democracy mm-hmm. At this point. We're definitely a plutocracy. I mean, our interests in big business, oil, that kind of thing, that's what guides us.
Judy, sorry to interrupt, Judy, but let me get a response to your thought here from our next guest. Her name is Juliette Kayyem, and she is a former assistant secretary at the Department of Homeland Security and also former Homeland Security advisor for the state of Massachusetts. Juliette Kayyem, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So you heard our caller Judy there saying it's time for the United States to look at its own responsibility in terms of its foreign policy. Just your quick thought on that before we move to global terrorism as well.
I think in many respects she's absolutely right, and I actually don't think people are pretending otherwise. I mean, whether it's the president or even his political opposition, this is a big moment about a very a horrible man, but no one thinks that either the terrorism that he unleashed or at least exposed to America, nor the bigger forces that Judy talks about why is it that we are engendering so much ill will parochial term, you know, sort of, you know, why do they hate us, so to speak. I think everyone knows that those big questions still have to be answered. It's just hard to focus on those today when we get so little good news in the efforts against Al Qaeda these days. I mean, you just mm-hmm. look in the last 2 weeks between Germany with stopping a terrorist attack, and then of course Morocco, which everyone forgets because it happened the day before the royal wedding, mm-hmm. where close to 20 Western tourists died. Al Qaeda is at least still around.
Well, Juliette, on that note, then, how is it in terms of next steps in America's engagement or fight against terrorism? How is it that we should be going about that, given Judy's comment that every action the United States has, you know, a reaction when
right.
it comes from its various targets around the world.
Right. Well, I would put the answer into three parts. So the first is just clearly going to be Pakistan. I mean, it is interesting from the outside to watch just both how President Obama and then Homeland Security Advisor John Brennan both tried to make it clear that we don't hate Pakistan. On the other hand, it seems quite shocking, right, that bin Laden was living in a plus-million-dollar mansion. So so Pakistan and the ripple effects Pakistan will have on our relationship or the war in Afghanistan and our relationship with India is, I think, going to be the primary foreign policy concern in the near future related to this. Then, of course, there's the second arena, which is the Arab Spring. Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda had sat it out. It was not about them. In fact, in some ways, between the Arab Spring and the death of bin Laden, it has been a horrible time for the forces of Al-Qaeda. And so we'll just see how that plays its course and how Al-Qaeda plays that. Mm-hmm. And then the third is the arena I've played in or worked in the last 4 or 5 years, which is, of course, the Homeland Security side. If I were in government now, I am not To be totally blunt, it would be I'm much more worried about soft targets right now, from the copycats, the random people that you either in Western Europe or here that have, you know, sort of showed themselves a couple times or more than a couple times in the last 18 months, whether it's Times Square or it's Detroit or it's Denver, and so you want to just be very, very concerned about potential soft targets. Airline and airport security will always be a threat. Mass transit will always be a threat, but there's no specific credible information right now. We've got to believe that's probably likely true.
Mm-hmm.
But you've also got to believe that there's just a lot of people very, very angry here and abroad, and also want to show the relevancy of Al-Qaeda even beyond bin Laden. And the best way to show your relevancy when you're a terrorist organization is to launch a successful attack.
Juliet, let me ask you about that regarding here in Massachusetts, because
yes.
You were you formerly advised Governor Deval Patrick on homeland security issues. I mean, we've got lots of soft targets here, harbor tunnels, natural gas terminals. I mean, even we've recently seen that people had been arrested in Watertown for allegedly financing terrorism. That's all just right here within the Bay State. So your particular areas of concern or focus here at home?
Well, I'll tell you, those are less soft targets than you might think. I mean, there's a whole public side because you want to be a transparent, open Commonwealth, and we want people to come visit, but there is a whole security apparatus related to those high consequence targets that would be sort of a big deal if something happened, and we just, you know, rightfully don't talk about them that much. But, you know, from the governor and state apparatus to the city, and certainly the private industry security apparatus, they're all focused on those. But look, I mean, I've you know, I can say this in government and outside of government, we are a great nation because we have soft targets. And I think one of the legacies of the Obama administration is clearly going to be that not simply that we got bin Laden, but that the way that we think about living in our society and the way that we are sort of talking about it like adults, right? There
mm-hmm.
will always be soft targets is going to be one of the legacies. I actually honestly think that it was also the tone of the president's speech last night, which was as important as what he was saying. It was not gloating. It was not mission accomplished. I think that sort of mature tone is what we have to take into this, because we're always going to have soft targets. And the second you make one soft target hard, then guess what? There'll be another one.
Juliet, stand by for just a moment.
Great.
We're gathering pieces of the story about the death of Osama bin Laden. We're asking you, the listener, to give us a call and join the conversation. What do you make of this? How has it changed your view about how safe you feel in this country? Tell us a story about where you were on 9/11. 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And let's take a call from Adele, who's in Hyde Park. Hi, Adele.
Hi.
You're
Thanks
on the
for
air.
Taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
You want me to just go ahead?
Yeah, okay. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Well, I heard in an email this morning from a friend that Osama bin Laden was dead. That's all I heard. And I couldn't hardly believe it until I turned on the TV and they confirmed it. I just couldn't believe it was dead. I felt, as I watched TV and saw, you know, the various scenes, very tearful and very grateful. To me, you know, I see it, I don't know if victory is the right word, but I think of it as a time to stop, because, the fact that he could be killed and demystified him in a way for me. I mean, what he accomplished in his cohorts in taking down the buildings was almost mythical, and he did seem unkillable, and it has taken 10 years. So I felt it was empowering to the country, to me, and I listened to everybody else. I really, you know, liked listening to how everybody felt.
Sure, so empowering.
I would like a moment to stop. I feel empowered.
All right.
It's been accomplished.
Adele, thanks so much for that call. We appreciate it. Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Mark Genest is a professor of strategy and development at the Naval War College, as well as the co-director of the Center on Irregular Warfare and Armed Groups at the United States Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island. And Mark Genest, good to have you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
So, speaking from a military perspective, what's your take on this news?
Well, my take on the news is that this is an important incremental victory for the United States in the war on terror. That anytime you can decapitate the leader of al-Qaeda, even though he's the spiritual leader, not the operational leader, it's important for us to demonstrate that, A, we're able to bring him to justice ultimately. Remember, this is an individual who declared war on the United States in 1993. And also, I think it strikes at the heart of al-Qaeda propaganda, because for the last decade, they've been putting out that bin Laden will never be killed by the United States, by the West, because Allah protects him. And this demonstrates that Allah's protection, I guess, has an expiration date.
So do you think so obviously, I mean, we've been hearing different points of view in this hour. A moment ago, Andrew Bacevich suggested that this was symbolic more than sort of strategically significant. Sounds like you have a different view.
Well, it's both symbolic and strategically significant. Remember, the war against al-Qaeda has been called a war of perceptions, a war of ideas. So here you have a tangible victory where you're taking out the spiritual leader of the organization, and you're also, I think, you're destroying the myth that surrounds him of his invincibility. So every day that bin Laden lived was yet another, thumb in the eye of the United States and its allies, and we have taken that asset away from the enemy. Now, we haven't destroyed al-Qaeda because it's a fragmented, decentralized franchise of an operation, and the second-in-command, Zawahiri, really runs the day-to-day operations. But we have really weakened it in a global sense, but not destroyed it.
I have a question, Mark Genest, about the operation. What do you know about the teams, these CBs that were used to carry it out? I wonder if you could give us and our listeners a little bit of information there. Obviously, some crack military units did a very good job there. What kind of light can you shed on these special forces?
Well, the special forces were Navy SEAL Team 6, which is the most elite special forces that we have in the U.S. military. And the way that they were able to accomplish the task is somewhat what the FBI agent was talking about, and we call them fusion teams, where on the strategic level you're bringing in the National Security Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency, using both human intelligence on the ground as well as technical surveillance from the air, and getting that operational intelligence to the special forces as quickly as possible so they can operationalize and act on that intel in a very quick fashion. And you saw this at its very best yesterday.
Juliet Kayyem, the very fact that the center of our attention, at least at the moment, seems to have been pulled into Pakistan also brings to mind, I read that Senator John Kerry, who's chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, he's going to be holding more hearings this week about the United States strategic relationship with Pakistan. But since your focus is on the homeland, I just wonder, like, how is it that you see this U.S.-Pakistan relationship really, I don't know, playing out from our perspective here at home? I mean, is there anything that we can do when one of our closest allies has, for example, an intelligence agency that the United States government doesn't even trust?
Right. And is either, the most, the worst intelligence agency ever because bin Laden is living in a million-dollar mansion, or, the most insidious because they're lying to their ally us. So it's one or the other, and we don't like either option. Obviously, I think Pakistan now is more probably, in my opinion, more sort of a foreign policy dynamic going on between Pakistan and the United States that will have a lot to do with money and a lot to do with the capacity to use drones. I mean, part of this is we just have to see what al-Qaeda does now that bin Laden is dead. I think Pakistan is important because we give them a lot of money and because bin Laden was there. As someone focused on terrorism as well, you got to head south to Yemen to really start to get nervous about the future of al-Qaeda. We've seen, I think, the most violent and aggressive bin Laden adherents are in Yemen. They're radicalizing people, including Americans or people in America, very quickly. And so while we need to deal with Pakistan on a diplomatic and military level, we're going to have to continue to deal with Yemen, which has all sorts of dynamics going on there with the with the leadership there on an intelligence and counterterrorism level, which is going to be difficult given we don't have much confidence in their leadership either. So in terms of countries that I sort of worry about for the future and in terms of our own security, it's clearly, and it has been for the last couple years, Yemen.
Mark Jeunesse, let me sort of follow up with you a similar question. Does it look to you like the Pakistanis finally did cooperate to make this operation possible, or what kind of light would you be able to shed on that?
Well, I think the best answer to that is we don't quite know yet, but early indications are that the Pakistanis had no idea what was happening, that they actually scrambled their jets when information came out that our helicopters were landing in the area. So that, I think, is the most tangible evidence that they had no idea what was going on. And the reason they weren't told about this was because bin Laden was housed in a military garrison town that literally you had to have access to this and guards protecting that general area. So this is an area that is controlled by the Pakistan military. So the reason that they weren't told about this is because they were complicit in protecting bin Laden. It's quite obvious at this point that Pakistan, at least elements in the Pakistani military, were directly responsible for providing a safe house with all of the luxuries that one could possibly hope for. In a very nice neighborhood for the bin Ladens.
Juliet Kayyem, before we have to take a quick break here, my last question for you at least is, again, bringing us back here to U.S. shores in terms of homeland security. You mentioned soft targets. What are your other sort of focuses what are your other focuses of where we should be paying attention in terms of keeping the homeland safe?
Yeah, well, I mean, the way you say homeland actually is how I say homeland, because, I mean, what are we talking about? We're talking about anywhere and everywhere, and I think the way we have to actually think about it is that there will always be threats out there. We are in a heightened level of concern just simply because, and we can all be rational about this, we killed bin Laden, right? And so there are going to be people not happy with that. And we'll continue to work with state, you know, the federal government will work with state and locals. There'll be the sharing of intelligence, although Secretary Napolitano said there's nothing specific or credible right now, and she was quite honest about that. There's no threat advisories going out, and I think what it just means for the average, you know, citizen is, you know, just be aware of your surroundings, and if we need your help, or give us your help if you think you know something. And you know, one of the best things about this is, you know, we killed bin Laden, but also life also goes on, which is actually one of the great things about sort of 10 years later, too.
Juliet Kayyem, former Assistant Secretary at the Department of Homeland Security and former Homeland Security Advisor for the state of Massachusetts, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We also heard from Mark Jeunesse. He's a professor of strategy and development at the Naval War College, co-director of the Center on Irregular War and Armed Groups of the United States Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island. Mark Jeunesse, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Coming up after the break, Massachusetts Congressman John Tierney about the symbolic and strategic effect of bin Laden's death.
Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.